Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy, high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. So keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left. Today on Change Surfer Radio, you'll be listening to a debate between me and Margaret Somerville, one of Canada's best-known bioethicists. The debate occurred at the University of Toronto on August 29th, 2003. It was titled Debating the Future, and it was sponsored by Better Humans magazine. The two of us are introduced by Tim Falconer, a Canadian journalist.
Today we have an opportunity to enjoy a debate between an ethicist with a sociology degree and an ethicist with a law degree. But if you read what was in this morning's Globe and Mail, you'll know that what separates them is a lot more than their backgrounds. And I'm sure that means we're up for a lively and spirited and thought-provoking debate. Let me start by introducing Margaret Somerville. She is, I can say with certainty, the best-known ethicist in Canada. And Peter Zosky, a guy who must have interviewed or met an awful lot of people before he died, called her the smartest woman in Canada. Born in Australia, her first degree was in pharmacy. Later, she went into law before eventually doing a doctorate in medicine, ethics, and law. Today, her official title is the Samuel Gale Professor of Law at McGill University. She's also professor in the Faculty of Medicine. And she's the founding director of the McGill Center for Medicine, Ethics, and Law. She has more awards and honors than you can shake a stick at, and she's been a consultant to governments and other bodies, including the World Health Organization and the UN's Human Rights Secretariat. To people in the media, she is an indispensable source and resource, in part because she's one of the few ethicists who understands what journalists do, and so they go to her. And yes, her media profile has led to resentment and jealousy on part of other ethicists that I've talked to anyway. She told me just a minute ago she's up to about 700 interviews a year, and she gets that many because she's good at it. She also keeps in the public eye by writing op-ed pieces and making public appearances. She's certainly not afraid to take unpopular and controversial stands on everything from male circumcision to euthanasia. On the same-sex issue, which we won't be debating tonight, she may have close to half of Canada on her side, but not the bulk of academics, media people, and intellectuals. And that meant she's been the subject of many vicious personal attacks. Some of her positions inevitably lead her to her being called a conservative. And the people, including James Hughes, who call her this, don't mean it as a compliment. For her part, she responds, "I'm not, but neither am I a liberal. Because of the nature of my work as an ethicist, while realizing that one's own personal values are always an influence, I have never taken a package approach to the values that should govern the ethical issues that I debate in public square." In her book, The Ethical Canary, Science, Society, and the Human Spirit, she argues that whatever breaches two values, the first one, respect for life, especially human life, and the second one, respect for the human spirit, whatever breaches those two values is inherently wrong. And she writes, "Scientific progress alone would be a hollow victory without the moral and ethical progress that must accompany it and ensure the humanization and humanity of our development and use of science." Now, Margaret is up against James Hughes today. And if Margaret Somerville is cautious about technology in the future, James Hughes is impatient. The self-styled Dr. J believes, quote, "the future can be very fun and that everybody can have lots of new toys." In other words, he is the poster boy for what Margaret Somerville called the techno-utopians in her piece in the Globe and Mail this morning. In the mid-80s, he did a stint as a Buddhist monk. As a graduate student, he threw himself into radical politics, founding and editing the internationally distributed zine Eco-Socialist Review, as well as editing a local student newspaper and the Journal of the Youth section of the Democratic Socialists of America. As a graduate student, he worked and taught at the University of Chicago's McLean Center for Clinical Medical Ethics. While there, he became increasingly distressed by what he saw as the knee-jerk ludism of both the left and bioethics, and began to develop a vision of a radical democratic movement for technological progress. This lefty but high-tech orientation led first to writings such as, quote, "Embracing Change with All Four Arms, a posthumanist defense of human genetic engineering. Today, he's a doctor of sociology and associate director of institutional research and planning at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, where he teaches health policy and research methods in the school's graduate public policy studies program. He is also co-founder and secretary of the World Transhumanist Association, an international organization dedicated to exploring the risks and benefits of emerging technologies with the aim of developing workable strategies and policies to enable societies and individuals to navigate the waters ahead. He calls himself a profound feminist with a serious distaste for his own gender. Like Margaret Somerville, Hughes is no stranger to controversial positions on everything from cloning to genetic manipulation, and on same-sex marriage debate, which he says is so last week. He argues for a system that will allow up to five people to enter into a cohabitation and child-rearing contract. A columnist for BetterHumans.com and a host of Change Surfer Radio, his book Cyborg Democracy, Free, Equal, and United in the Post-Human World will be published in 2004.
This is Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and you're listening to a debate between me and Margaret Somerville, staged by Better Humans Magazine, August 29th, 2003, at the University of Toronto.
Okay, let's start with the first question. Should we ban cloning? Now, cloning is probably the technology that has the greatest power to give us the shivers. Part of that is, as Simon mentioned in his opening remarks, is because of science fiction. And for so long, it seemed so fanciful. But today, animal cloning is real, although far from perfect. And the Raelian hoax notwithstanding, someone somewhere is sure to clone a human being sooner than we can sort out the ethics of the technology. Is this a good idea? Well, an infertile couple might think so, but so might the rich man who wants a clone to harvest organs from when his give out. Some people say we should trust what ethicists call the yuck factor and ban human cloning. Others, including Alberta ethicist Tim Caulfield, insist that we shouldn't ban cloning because our attitudes change. He points out, for example, that at one point people were disgusted by the notion of medical students operating on cadavers. And obviously today we think that's fairly normal. And anyone my age or older will no doubt remember the widespread revulsion that almost everybody felt in the 70s when the first test tube baby was born. Well, that test tube baby had her 25th birthday this summer, and now in vitro fertilization, given a fancy new name, a little bit of rebranding, but IVF babies are now commonplace. On the other hand, if we take Caulfield's argument to the extreme, we wouldn't ban anything because we would say, well, you know, our attitudes might change. But that's just an introduction. Let's turn to our experts, two people I know who have very different opinions on cloning, and hear what they have to say. Margaret, you first.
Thank you, Tim. Well, should we ban cloning? I think yes, which I'm sure you won't be surprised to hear. What it involves is respect for life in a new way. We've always needed to have a very strong and fundamental principle of respect for life, and that meant respect for each person who was on the planet and respect for human life in general, that as societies we needed to have that. But we're the first humans who've ever had to consider what respect for life requires in new ways, and one of those new ways is respect for the transmission of human life. In the past, the only way that you could transmit human life was good old-fashioned sexual reproduction, and indeed prior to Louise Brown, in a woman's body, not in a test tube. Now we can transmit life outside of the body, and we can transmit it not by sexual reproduction but by asexual replication. That's what cloning is. And so we are each unique humans, and here I'm leaving aside identical twins or triplets, which I think is a separate category. No time to debate that within 5 minutes. But cloning changes that uniqueness. Human reproductive cloning, which is where you're cloning to try to make a baby, is baby making with the emphasis on making. It causes a loss of authenticity that comes with uniqueness. It means that children become fungible, they're replaceable. It affects emotional bonding because that can be linked to uniqueness. We know, for instance, that we more easily discard objects that are not unique. And I think we would have to ask the same question, would that also be true for people? It's also interesting that over 90% of Canadians agree that reproductive cloning should be banned. That was the Environics poll. And what the pollsters tell me is that that's an extraordinarily high level of consensus. They said it almost amounts to unanimity. And what I would suggest to you is that that rejection of reproductive cloning reflects a broadly shared deep moral intuition that this is inherently wrong. I don't agree with what I know that my opponent here, Dr. Hughes, will argue is absolute rights to reproductive autonomy. It's what comes from John Robertson at the University of Texas, what he calls collaborative non-coital reproduction, and that you ought to be able to do it in any way you want to. And one of the things that I'd ask when the argument of liberty and freedom to reproduce in any way that you want is put forward, what about the child? The child has no freedom in determining that. So I would propose to you that reproductive cloning is wrong vis-a-vis the children cloned, because each of us has got a right to our own unique ticket in the genetic lottery of the passing on of life. We've got a right not to be intentionally created as a copy of someone else. We've got a right not to be designed by another human. And we've got a right not to be placed at serious risks of illness, disability, or premature death. And our animal experiments show that that's true of cloned animals. We have, to use the words of the philosopher Hans Jonas, a right to live our life as a surprise to ourselves. And reproductive cloning contravenes all of those rights. As well, reproductive cloning is wrong vis-a-vis the mode of transmission of life, and that's a new thing that we have to think about. I believe, because I start from a presumption of a deep respect for the natural, that when we move outside of that, we have to be able to justify what we're doing, and that cloning as a mode of transmission of human life cannot be justified. I leave aside animals here at the moment, but I think we also need to ask that with respect to animals. When the comparison is made with IVF, as for instance Professor Tim Caulfield has, I think we have to make a distinction between repairing nature when it fails, which is what IVF is, and that's wrongly argued as a precedent for cloning, because cloning is not repairing nature when it fails, it's doing what is impossible in nature. Cloning makes transmission of life a technological feat, a manufactural production, instead of an intimate human experience. And moreover, it opens up other precedents that fail to respect the transmission of human life. For example, if we allow cloning, then why not make embryos from two ova or two sperm or multiple genetic parents, or even start from scratch and use individual genes to build a new human eventually? I believe that all of those things would be inherently wrong, particularly with respect to the resulting child. There's also another kind of cloning. It's actually the same science, but it's got a different purpose. And that's, instead of being called human reproductive cloning, it's called human therapeutic cloning. And in that case, we're making embryos in order to use them for research or to make products from them. I believe that's wrong, because what it involves is intentionally transmitting human life for the purpose of killing that life and using it as a product. It's to see another human life as just a repair kit for us, as simply a gene machine that would be useful to us. Moreover, another objection to it is that the technology, because it's the same for therapeutic cloning and reproductive cloning, that the research on that will facilitate reproductive cloning, and I don't think that we should be doing that. So to conclude, what I would ask that you consider doing, I would urge you to do, is to hold that we must hold respect for the transmission of human life on trust for future generations as part of the common heritage of humankind, and to allow cloning would contravene that trust. Thank you.
I don't have a mic here.
Let me start where Margot left off. The issue of stem cell cloning and whether it's appropriate or not is really an issue about whether the embryo is a person or biological property. We need to make these lines in life, between different kinds of life, about what is a person and what is property. And this is an essential line in our society, in liberal democratic thought. Most people in the United States and Canada do not think the embryo is a person, which is why we legalized abortion in the first place, because if it was a person, there would be strong arguments against abortion. So if it's not a person and it's biological property, then there's a strong presumption that parents should have a right to donate this tissue for the purpose of at least benefiting other human lives. And I think it's pretty self-evident to most people that using that tissue for allowing the lame to walk, allowing the blind to see, all the different benefits that stem cell cloning will permit is a human good. So I think we definitely, in that territory, we are arguing the fetal personhood and a quasi-religious argument about whether there is some kind of ensoulment in the embryo or not. And if you don't believe that there is, then really all the mumbo-jumbo about the dignity, the slippery slopes and so forth is nonsense. About unnaturalness of reproduction, I think we also have to be very clear that the line that is drawn between cloning as unnatural reproduction and everything else that we do is not a line that's universally shared. The Catholic Church has a doctrine of what's natural and unnatural, and a lot of things are on the unnatural side in the Catholic Church. So even though the majority of people may today, as was pointed out, draw that line on the side of cloning, as they once saw IVF as unnatural, as people once saw birth control as unnatural, and birth control used to be illegal in our societies. It used to not be one of the rights that we considered to be one of our rights. But the whole thrust of liberal democracy for the last 400 years has been to increasingly respect our rights to control our own lives and bodies. That is why we have increasingly expanded the realm of things that we can control for ourselves, what we read, what we think, what we speak, and what kinds of who we have sex with, and what kinds of contraception that we use. All these things are rights about controlling our own body. The idea that John Robertson at the United States invented procreative liberty, that's pretty silly. Well, the reason that we have a principle of procreative liberty, the right to control how we have children, is because of the history of Nazi eugenics, because of the history of American eugenics, which was governments telling people what kinds of children they could have, when it was appropriate to have children, and what kinds of things they could do or not do. We have a principle now, because of that experience, that people should not be told, that the government has to meet a very high burden of proof to tell people when they can and cannot have children and what kinds of children that they should have. And the only principle on which I accept that someone has a right for the government to tell you when you can't have children is the safety to you and the safety to your children. And those two principles, on those two grounds, reproductive cloning should now be illegal, because it is clearly unsafe to women, because it uses far too many eggs that have to be harvested, and it is unsafe to children, because none of the mammalian cloning that we see has routinely generated unproblematic products. So yes, currently cloning should be illegal, but once it is found to be, once it has been perfected in animal experimentation, cloning is no different, not qualitatively different in any way from other reproductive technologies. And it should be one of the reproductive technologies that people have a right to use as their own prerogative about how they reproduce. Okay. Somerville argues that the interests of the child should predominate over the procreative liberty of parents. And I think that the burden here is, why does that not also give the state a right to tell parents who have genetic defects? You know, she's concerned about people using cloning to create children with genetic defects. Why does that not also give the state a right to tell people with genetic defects that they can't reproduce? The basic eugenic argument. Twins. Cloning is the creation of twins. A lot of societies think twins should be killed because they consider them unnatural. But there is no right to uniqueness, and twins value their shared genetic bond. Just last week, it was found that twins commit suicide less often. So all of the arguments, all of the hand-waving, comes back to this naturalness thing. All of the concerns are not things that we would accept as arguments for why people should not have other kinds of children with other means, like in vitro fertilization. The kid's going to be different. Well, yes, Louise Brown was different for half a day, and then people got over it. Clones will be different. The relationship to the child will be different. Yes, relationships to children different all the way. By the way, I think lesbians and gay men should be allowed to use reproductive technology to have children. That should be absolutely one of the rights that people have, to, if it's safe, if it doesn't create harms in the children, and it's safe for the parents. Thank you very much.
Is this mic working?
First of all, I agree with James that the embryo is not a person, but then keep in mind that aeroplanes and ships and companies are all persons in the law. So person's an artificial legal construct. What the human embryo is it's the earliest, we are all ex-embryos. It's the earliest form of every human life. So the question is, what may we and must we not do to it? And really the basic argument is between, is it potential human life or is it human life with potential? And I believe it's human life with potential, that like the rest of us, from the time it starts, when it's fertilized, it is in the process of becoming something else, which we are all our lives. And therefore, I think that the same respect is owed to it as is owed to us. And we can't intentionally create it in order to destroy it. And we shouldn't intentionally create it through these means that are not ways that we would normally transmit human life. You'll notice that Dr. Hughes emphasized the benefits of this technology. That's an argument that says the ends justify the means. It's a utilitarian approach that says, look at all these wonderful benefits, forget about what you're doing to get them. He also spoke about control, and really his arguments were centered around what I would call intense individualism, these poor people who want to do this, or they've got some reasons why they want to do it. As well, there was a scare factor. The Nazis told people what to do, so we shouldn't tell anybody what to do. Well, I mean, in that case, we shouldn't tell anybody what to do about anything. As well, linking back to intense individualism, we have to understand that unless we can share some fundamental basic human values, we actually can't form a society or form a community. And surely there's no more important event. And in fact, humans have always found their most important of values around the two great events of every human life, and that is birth and death. Those are the places where we focus those values. So this is an enormously important focus, not just for our individual values, but for our collective and shared values. And cloning is different from other reproductive technologies. It's not, Dr. Hughes said it's not qualitatively different. It is different. There's a huge difference between making a child from two men's sperm as compared with a child that's created, even using technology, from an ova and a sperm. There is a world of difference. There's a difference in kind between those two situations. So that's it.
Well, I'm sure we all remember the Monty Python song, Every Sperm is Sacred. I mean, the argument from potential does not get you very far. There are a lot of things which are potential human beings, including a bushel of hay, but it doesn't give them rights. What gives something rights is that it becomes a subjective, self-conscious being that can experience pain and pleasure. Am I allowed to be rebutting? Is this part of my time? Okay, good.
Yeah.
I wasn't keeping track. Okay, good. Well, it's always a pleasure. In terms of the actual benefits that could that people could have, I don't argue on the basis that people should be guaranteed rights because they necessarily will have some concrete benefit. I think that people should be allowed to have sex and have children pretty much according to their own pleasure, and that unless there are concrete harms, and I think we have to meet a very high, and again, you haven't responded to my critique, that why, on what grounds do you think the state actually should be telling people when they can and can't have children? We would never accept these kinds of arguments, psychological arguments, for instance, that there might be some kind of psychological harm to a child to be born in this particular way with other technologies. It's simply the yuck factor. The yuck factor in bioethics is a bankrupt way to argue. It's precisely the way in which people argued against interracial marriage. They thought it was perfectly self-evident that it was yucky for people of different races to marry, and it is not. In fact, when one submits it to liberal democratic analysis, people should be allowed to marry who they want, despite everybody else's yuckiness about it, and I should be allowed to eat tofu if you don't like it. You have to meet a very high burden before you tell me what to do.
Okay. Dr. Somerville then received a question from the floor.
What I spoke about was a widely shared deep moral intuition, and I referred to the fact that 90% of Canadians felt that it was inherently wrong to clone a child. And so I think that's a very strong base, and particularly in a democratic society, for an idea that there is something wrong. You know, there's a saying in ethics that we ignore our feelings at our peril. It doesn't mean that our feelings are always right, but our feelings often give us ethical red flags that mean we need to examine a situation to see whether or not it's right. And so therefore I would take that as a very serious warning. I think a lot of people as well dismiss moral intuition as a way of knowing. I think one of the problems of our current sort of exclusive focus on science, and I've got huge respect for science, but exclusive focus on it as the only valid way of knowing, is that we've forgotten how to access these other ways of human knowing that I think are extremely important, which isn't to say that reason and science aren't important too, but these other ways are important as well. So yes, I would use those ways.
Just parenthetically, I don't argue that science should be ungoverned by feelings or by values, but I just differ in the kind of values that we want to govern it by. I believe in democratic values, liberty, equality, solidarity, rather than vague quasi-religious appeals. So.
Okay, thank you. There are two mics set up, so if you would like to ask a question, please go to one of the mics. Sir, do you want to grab the mic there?
I guess primarily Dr. Somerville. The comments you made about the individual being born as being somehow strange because they just reproduce somebody else exactly seems to make a large presumption that the nurture and raising of that individual is not a significant contribution to their uniqueness as a human being. And I'm just wondering on what basis would you make such an assumption since nobody's ever tried to do such a thing?
No, you're right. I think that nurture and environment, and in fact the more that we're learning about genetics, the more that we're realizing that, because we've now got proper scientific evidence that environment can actually cause genes to express themselves or cause them not to do so. So that's absolutely right. But I heard a Japanese scientist recently give a presentation, and the Japanese had decided to try to do a mathematical calculation that if every single person who'd ever been born had been born of the same two people, what was the chance that there'd be two genetically identical people born? And they came to the conclusion that it was so extremely small that it was, you could say it was impossible. So what an extraordinary thing that is, that there's never been another you and there never will be unless we clone you. And yet we're going to contravene that. We think that it's, okay. I mean, I can't help but use the word manufacture. It's not procreation, it's manufacture of the new humans. The other thing is that if it's acceptable to clone one of you, why is it unacceptable to clone 10,000 of you? That would be a restriction of liberty as well. Why would we want that?
Why would it be a violation of anyone's liberty for parents to decide to have other people's children? Whose liberty would be violated by having 100 or 1,000 clones of one particular person?
I wasn't talking about liberty there. I was just talking about the desirability of having 1,000 or 10,000 identical people.
And surely when you say that there aren't identical people, you are discounting twins, because
that's a very limited sort of natural human occurrence. And there's a different ethical analysis when we intentionally intervene to create a situation as compared with when it simply happens by chance.
Do you think that the practice of fertility medicine, which actually increases the likelihood of twins and triplets, is unethical for that grounds?
Because no, I don't. If it's a reasonable risk in the circumstances.
Okay, so you don't think that parents who have a genetic disease that they don't want to pass on should be allowed to use cloning as a reproductive technique in order not to rely on other donated gametes?
No, I don't.
You've been listening to the first of four sections of a debate that was held between myself, James Hughes, and Margaret Somerville in Toronto, Canada at the University of Toronto on August 29th, 2003. The debate was sponsored by Better Humans magazine, and you can buy a CD of the debate at the Better Humans website at betterhumans.com. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about today's show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. At the Change Surfer website, you can find past and future shows archived in streaming MP3 thanks to the A Infos Radio Project. Also at www.changesurfer.com are instructions on how to order copies of our shows and myriad relevant links. So educate, agitate, and organize. And I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.